Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Listen to what we started.
This is KBKA of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company.
The future really did begin here. The world's first scheduled broadcast was made from Westinghouse's
KBKA.
KDKA.
KDKA.
Listen as we share 100 years of KDKA radio.
Climb aboard our magic carpet for a montage of memories. Radio's finest hour.
Someplace special.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Mangino. Thank you very much for tuning in to KDKA, especially if you're on the AM dial at 1020. But I also want to welcome you to listen on the radio.com app, where you can download the app and use the play pause feature so you don't miss a thing of what we're about to do in a commemoration of 100 years, like we will be doing on this Wednesday and every Wednesday for the rest of 2020. You can also go back and rewind. If there's anything you may have missed or you want to go back and hear again, use the radio.com app to do just that. Let your friends know that they can go and download the app and listen as well. KDKA, 100 years. On November the 2nd, it will be officially 100 years. And none of us, I don't think, can actually go back to that first broadcast and remember it. But we all have fond memories, don't we, of when we first found KDKA? I like to meet people who tell me, I just discovered you. I'm so glad that we did. And we love listening to Larry in the morning and like Marty and Lynn and Wendy and you and Rob Pratt on the weekends. And thank you very much for tuning in and finding us. There are others that go back a little bit further. When Mike Pintek was still with us, and John Cigna, and Fred Hansberger, maybe going back to Jack Bogut, maybe even further back than that, but going all the way back to 1920, I want to take you back to a special, a couple of clips that we had for a special about that very first broadcast 100 years ago.
The time, November 2nd, 1920. The place, an industrial area of East Pittsburgh. Rain is falling gently in the darkness. Just ahead, two young men are walking quickly toward one of the entrances of a large factory building. They enter and hurry up the long stairway to join three others in a tiny makeshift shack on the roof. A shack filled with electrical equipment. Each takes their place in the room. William Thomas is at a large panel of switches. R.S. McClelland and John Frazier sit at telephones. Chief Engineer Little stands by. And seated in front of a small box is Leo H. Rosenberg. William Thomas checks his pocket watch, nods, and throws a switch. And Leo Rosenberg begins the world's first scheduled broadcast.
This is KDKA
of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
But did Leo Rosenberg realize he was making history?
Everybody asked me that, and we had no idea, because there never had been any broadcasting. As a matter of fact, there was no such word as broadcast at that time. What we did was to send out the electric return.
But the man responsible for the Westinghouse engineering triumph wasn't present at that first broadcast. Dr. Frank Conrad, assistant chief engineer of Westinghouse, was standing by at his experimental radio station, 8XK, 5 miles away in Wilkinsburg, in case the East Pittsburgh equipment failed. It was on this original transmitter that Dr. Conrad had first experimented 4 years earlier. Conrad's wife recalls.
A few wires wrapped around the piece of pipe. I couldn't believe it. You looked at that thing and it talked back to you.
The real start of KDK was due to the fact that some of the department stores in Pittsburgh begin to advertise radio sets, which would receive signals that came from my laboratory.
It was 1919 when Conrad, bored with transmitting his voice, first sent music into the air.
The music will be from a Victrola pulled up close to the wireless transmitter.
Soon, Conrad exhausted his supply of Victrola records. He arranged with the Hamilton Music Store of Wilkinsburg to supply records in exchange for announcements of the store's name. Thus, the Hamilton Music Store became the world's first radio advertiser.
How great it is to hear Mike Pintek again. What an amazing story of how we began. And we're going to hear so much more about the transition. I mean, we used to play so much music. You just heard the records that were exhausted. We played all music for the longest time with a focus on news, and then it was a transition from music to talk for a little while, and then ultimately to all talk. And I can't think of anyone better right now than Larry Richard to go back in time with and find out from him what it was like to make that transition, what it was like to grow up listening to a radio station that meant the world to this region in Pittsburgh, and to then be able to not only just be on it, but to then host the morning show, the most highly rated show on the station. We're going to hear a lot from Larry about growing up as a kid, what the station ultimately meant, how he played the very last record that ever aired on KDKA, and then how things changed, how he went from playing music and then back to television for a while, and then ultimately to hosting the morning show, but it coincided with the events of 9/11, 2001, and how that ultimately changed everything. And then the impact that had on radio here, because in the evenings we had a sports show. Many of you who are longtime listeners may recall Thor Tolo. He was on with us for years and years, and he was on during that time. And how broadcasting and how KDKA changed with the events of 9/11. We'll talk to Thor Tolo coming up a little bit later on this evening. Larry Richard, we step back in time with him, coming up next on A Look Back as we celebrate KDKA's 100 years on KDKA Radio.
Celebrating 100 years.
Listen to what we started.
KDKA Radio with Robert Mangino.
Once again, thank you very much for tuning in on KDKA Radio 1020 on your AM dial. Make sure you download the app radio.com so you can go back and listen to any of this, especially within the last 24 hours. You can go back and listen once again and share it with your friends and your family, too. For anybody who's discovered KDKA Radio in the last 19 years or so, all you've ever been waking up to is Larry Richard. It's pretty amazing, considering how long he's been able to successfully be on KDK, longer than John Cigna, longer than Jack Bogut, two of the greatest names in KDK radio history. What was it like, though, for Larry to grow up in Pittsburgh listening to KDK? We'll find out right now.
I literally listened
while sitting on the kitchen floor next to the heater with my parents doing the crossword puzzle in the paper, and Jack Bogut was on the radio. So imagine my parents lived long enough, then down the road, they were doing the crossword puzzle, having coffee, and it was me on the radio. And my mother said to me once, well, you know, they said, and I'm like, Mom, that was me. She goes, oh, my God, it was you. I go, I'm one of them. I'm not all of they, but I am a them. She goes, it was you, them, they. So it was kind of, you know, growing up in this town, kind of cool to have that happen. But it was a long road in between. I went to North Allegheny High School. The school was new. They put in a color television studio. They had 12 students in a pilot program. I got some positive reinforcements from one of the board members. I did a video, and I did the narration. And they said, I thought this was for the students. Who's that narrator? And they said, that's one of the students. He goes, oh, that was enough that encouraged me and another friend to get into radio in college. And then I thought, well, there's no way I'm going to get sustain a career. But my dad always used to say, do something you love and you're passionate about. Don't worry about the money. Well, I ended up finding a job in country radio, Y108, out of high school or in college.
Wow. His father must have known my father, because that was the exact same advice that I got from my dad that kind of launched me into a radio career, too. But when you think back to those days in the 60s and 70s, and you got to wonder and realize what KDK meant to everyone.
Well, think about Jack Bogut coming here at the late 60s. There was no morning news on television. As far as school closings and delays, for instance, there was no other resource. KDK was the only way for students and parents to find out if their school was delayed or closed, which, when you think about it, now you get robocalls, you can get text, you get it online, you can call the school, they call you. We still do it, and I think people still like to hear their school names occasionally on the air. But back then, gargantuan listening audience. Mm-hmm. There was no internet, you know, no other way to find out.
Absolutely. And we think of Larry and we think of KDK, but there was a time before there was KDK, and here's more from Larry about right before he arrived here.
So I'm working at WTAE-TV, and I get a call to come to KDK Radio and TV 31 years ago. My mother and father used to sit in the kitchen, do the crossword puzzle, have their coffee, and listen to Jack Bogut. And they wanted me to follow John Cigna. He announced his retirement, and it was on the QT. And then I got to follow first John. Now, that's how I got the morning show after John. But way before that, I actually was on after Cigna playing records for 4 hours between John and Trish Beatty. Our new news anchor, we did 15 minutes of news, was Bill Steinbach. And it's incredible, because I knew Jack Bogut, worked with John Cigna, eventually, you know, replaced John when he decided to retire years later. But for 4 years, I played records. And then I was the last DJ to play a record. And we chose American Pie, The Day the Music Died, and it made national news. I did the same thing at WTAE, so I've killed the music at two radio stations.
Did you use the same song on both radio stations?
No. I can't remember what the TAE one was. Anyway, they no longer exist as that. So we're still here, and we're getting ready for our centennial.
A little bit more from Larry on ending the music.
Yeah, I also was on television at the same time. So I had a morning TV. I had a morning TV show first. Then I became the weather guy. And then I had my show on KDK Radio after Cigna. And then eventually they went talk. Well, they wanted to see if I could do talk radio. So they told me I could have a talk show, but I couldn't take calls, which I think was kind of handicapping me on being able to, you know, at least try to explore being a talk show host. But then I decided, you know, I can't do this like that. So I just went strictly to TV for quite a while and became the evening weather anchor on KDK television. Then I was thinking, I'm missing all my kids' stuff. You know, I had three young kids at the time, and I'm praying for a change. But normally you have to leave town to change stations or jobs. And miraculously, my prayers were answered. I got a call saying, John Cigna's going to retire. This is on the QT. Would you be interested in the job? And it took 6 months to get to the point where we did it. And then I was supposed to roll in on a Harley Fat Boy with a helmet on, you know, where you couldn't see who I was. And Cigna said, you got to be a Harley rider, got to be Italian-American. So here I am, not Italian-American, and didn't really ride. And I roll into the fountain area in front of Gateway 1 downtown, and I pull back my shade, and people go, hey, he's not Italian. I said, I married an Italian-American, and I hardly ride. So Cigna was loving that. And then my biggest concern was, how do you follow a legend like John Cigna?
Right.
You know, people were going to say, well, he's not Cigna, and I couldn't be Cigna. You have to be yourself, like Cigna was in Jack Bogut. So I was really concerned about that. But my announcement as his replacement came 5 days before September 11th. And then the world changed. The station changed. We're much more news-focused, as we should have been in the moment. And every day it was about, you know, just getting through the next day. And so that went on for a while and eventually just kind of morphed into what we ended up doing for 19 years to this day.
Larry Richard, and remembering his career and his start and where he has been, 9/11, a key pivot point for the radio station. We'll get into more of 9/11 and how that impacted KDK over the years in just a moment. News headlines coming up on KDK Radio. I'm Angino. Thank you very much for listening to this very special broadcast as we are celebrating 100 years for KDKA. It'll be official come November. Every Wednesday for the rest of the year, we are going to take a special look back in the 8 o'clock hour on Wednesdays of special things that have occurred, hosts that we've had on the air, sports, news, major figures in the region that connected back to KDK. It's going to be a time that you'll definitely want to set aside and make sure you're listening. And one of the great ways to listen is on the radio.com app, so you don't miss a thing, and you can actually go back and listen again, especially if you're listening in the past 24 hours, because you can rewind back to any portion you want to listen to. And thank you very much for listening on your AM radio as well, 1020 on the AM dial. In the last segment, we were hearing from Larry Richard talking about how he grew up listening to KDKA, dreamed of being on the station, made it here, was the last person to play a song on KDKA, dabbled with talk, went back to TV, and then had the opportunity to take over for John Cigna after his storied career. And then was wondering, what would it be like to take over for somebody that significant, that big of a talent, that big of a personality? And then he mentioned about how 9/11 occurred. And
I was actually golfing with my dad. I was off that day celebrating my new job, which was about to start. And we were at a place with another friend and his dad. And we were near Swickley, and we noticed something strange because there's a lot of aircraft coming and going. And then a guy in a golf cart came up and said, a plane hit the World Trade Center. And we all thought, you know, like a Piper Cub smaller plane. We didn't realize what had transpired. Then they said, no, a second plane purposefully went into the second tower. This is a jet airliner. And then we heard about Somerset. We walked into the clubhouse, and everybody was standing there in front of the monitors. Ironically, Jack Ham was there just as a golfer. And nobody said anything to each other. And then when we saw replays, then the towers fell. And we all went home. And then everybody wanted to find out, where's my family? What's going on? Because that Somerset flight came close enough to be in visual contact with people in Pittsburgh in a USX tower. So not knowing what was happening was terrifying for everybody. But imagine then, that's my first chance to go on the air followed that. And my first guest was then Bishop Worrell talking about, where does God go when it doesn't look like, when good things are happening to, or bad things are happening to good people.
Do you remember where you were when the plane struck on 9/11? Do you remember listening to the radio? One of the greatest in radio news, Bob Koppler, was on the air. Let's go back to 9/11, 2001.
An act of war, attack on America. It may have been the bloodiest day in U.S. history as hijacked jetliners slammed into New York's World Trade Center, collapsing the famous Twin Towers. Correspondent Eileen Cornell.
There are people alive trapped in the basement of the World Trade Center who have been contacting relatives in Seattle by use of their cell phones, and they have, two people, made calls out to Seattle and said exactly where they were, that they were with others, and that they were with police officers who were all alive and waiting for rescue. They haven't yet reached any of these people, but they know where they are.
The gruesome task of counting the dead could take weeks. As many as 50,000 people believed to work in the World Trade Center. More than 300 firefighters and police are presumed dead. A third hijacked jet plowed into the Pentagon, where more than 100 people were reported dead. We get more on that story now from CNN's Dick Iuliano in Washington. Dick?
Bob, recovery operations continue at the Pentagon. The fire chief says that as many as 800 people may have been killed in this attack, but they don't really know yet. They do know that there are still some individuals who are wounded and are in the debris, and they're working to reach these individuals and try to rescue them. And meanwhile, while those recovery operations continue, Pentagon employees have been told to report to duty today as the government continues operations.
CNN's Dick Iuliano live in Washington, D.C. A fourth attempt failed. United Flight 93 headed to San Francisco from Newark, hijacked and crashed just north of Somerset County Airport. KDK Radio's Dave James is in Somerset County this morning. David?
Well, Bob, authorities yesterday established the crash site as a crime scene. FBI agent Jeff Killeen says the investigation begins in earnest this morning.
This investigation is in its infancy. We have devoted considerable resources and will devote considerable resources. And with the help of many other agencies, we're going to attack this problem and try to come to a reasonable conclusion. And that includes Department of Environmental Resources. We have the Red Cross here, the Salvation Army, ATF, Pennsylvania State Police, other local officers, and probably many more agencies that are almost too many to number at this point in time.
KDK Radio News Time, 6:05. There were no threats against Pittsburgh, which turned into a ghost town Tuesday. The city was virtually shut down. People were lined up at blood donation centers. There appeared to be no run on food stores. President Bush has put the government on a war footing.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America.
Some are calling for a declaration of war. The prime suspect, Osama bin Laden, 44, a wealthy Saudi militant suspected in previous attacks on U.S. citizens. There are sporadic reports of soaring prices and frayed nerves at gasoline stations around the country. At some gasoline stations, prices of gasoline have jumped $5 a gallon. Prices on the New York Stock Exchange closed down 682 points. U.S. financial markets will be closed for a second day. Economists are predicting an economic recession. Not in 60 years has the United States changed so dramatically in such a short period of time. No superpower has ever been hit like this. It was another Pearl Harbor.
Once again, Bob Koppler, just after 9/11, 2001. And Larry Richard, more with Larry, on how things really took a dramatic change.
Yeah, I didn't have the anxiety of trying to be somebody I'm not. I think it was just telling the story. What's going on today? And it generated and created things that we still do today because of it. And that's what the radio still does, I think, better than anybody. You have all this massive amounts of information and technology, and so much is coming at people. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, online, stream, you know, who knows? And journalistic principles have been thrown out the window. You don't know what sources are coming from. So we still try to present Pittsburgh story every morning. What do you think is most important? What happened overnight for the morning audience? And trying to give people in 10, 15 minutes enough of what's going on. So when they get somewhere, they know what a subject is that somebody brings up at work. You know, say, hey, did you hear about, yeah, I heard about it on KDK Radio. And after 100 years, we're still here. And interestingly enough, this guy whose name is Peter Diamandis, who is one of the 50, he was just named by Forbes magazine as one of the world's 50 greatest leaders. And almost nobody knows his name. He is somebody who has analyzed technology and tried to help humanity with it. So he looked at the last 100 years, which fits perfectly into KDK Radio's beginning. And he had a 96-slide presentation, a PowerPoint. And when he talked about 1920, what's the most significant thing that happened in technology? And the first thing you see is KDK Radio. Made me proud, and I think people in the region should be proud of that fact, too, because we also have talked to people that feel it was such a game-changing moment that it was as big as or bigger than the internet in terms of its influence on people on a daily basis.
Once again, Larry Richard, what are the things that changed on 9/11 and the days afterwards was the amount of content devoted to the attacks. And we had a sports talk show that wasn't functioning as a sports talk show. We'll talk to the host, Thor Tolo, coming up next on KDK Radio.
Celebrating 100 years.
Listen to what we started.
KDK Radio with Robert Mangino.
Thank you very much for tuning in to KDK Radio on your AM dial, 1020, on your smartphone, the radio.com app, where you can pause live radio and then go back and rewind to listen to anything once again in the last 24 hours. We were talking about how things changed when Larry took over the morning show right around 9/11, and it changed for KDK with a much greater focus on news. It's so much so that a nightly sports talk show that we had wasn't about sports any longer. The host, Thor Tolo, joins us on the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh Newsline. Thor, welcome back to KDK Radio.
Robert, good evening. It's an honor to be on your show, and I really appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for making time. Go back to 9/11, if you could, and how things changed, and what changed for you as a host, especially that first week?
How crushing it was to the soul, and how heartbreaking it was, and how visceral the reactions were. And at the same time, that first day in the afternoon at 4:15, when Fred Hansberger and I were together, he'd hankering the afternoon drive show, came to me for the sportscast at 4:15, and it was the very last afternoon sportscast we would do for the next several weeks, because Mike Romai and I joined forces that night. He then was hosting the 9 to midnight show, and I the sports show from 6 until 9. And then for the next, I don't remember exactly how many weeks, but I'm assuming it was 3 or 4 weeks at least, we were together co-hosting from 6 p.m. until midnight. You know, that's quite a run, you know, 6 hours a night, 5 days a week for a month. And yet it was very liberating to me, because that, by the way, was a turning point for me as I made the transition from sports permanently into news coverage and talk show hosting and straight news talk hosting, I mean, also out here in Seattle years later. But the larger point was, though, that there was a lack of synchronization to what the routine had been. And now in the new America, in the new reality, and in the new history that was the wake of 9/11, everything just seemed to take on a life of its own. And the calls we got and the feedback we got and the consistency of decorum and respect, and there was little, if any, joking around by callers. I mean, and there was hardly anything political about the calls, even though Mike was clearly left of center and I still today right of center politically. There was no sense of it becoming political, and that's what I appreciated most. It became more of a nightly town hall conversation versus a combative by nature talk show environment.
When you were hosting sports and you were making this transition, did it almost feel as though sports was irrelevant at that point? I mean, was there this desire within you to talk about this on a nightly basis? Or was there a part of you that thought it would be nice to have that little bit of an escape to talk sports again?
That is a great question, Robert. And I think it, 3.5 weeks later, now that that timetable rings a bell, I think 3.5 weeks later, our then news director, PJ Komenchik, came to us and said, I think it's time that we get back to some sort of normalcy. But on that day, and this is why I appreciate your question, Robert, on that day, the Chicago White Sox had just landed in New York City in the wee hours of the morning and checked into their hotel before sunrise. And I remember the White Sox had made a roster move, and that was the story that I was sharing in the 4:15 sportscast on 9/11, and it just seemed so fantastically out of place, so trivial, obviously, you know. And I remember the conversation with PJ and with Fred, God rest his soul, and we just agreed that, yeah, it just didn't seem to make much sense. Mark Wilkins, the former Pirates pitcher, was a month away from being granted free agency, and I had a soundbite with him talking about how he wanted to, you know, stay with the Pirates if possible, and that too was a part of that abbreviated 45-second sportscast. But the moment it ended, I remember just looking up and Fred looking at me, and we just kind of nodded in agreement without any words being spoken that pretty much that was it. Let's back the horse into the barn and let's get down to the business of grieving as a nation.
What do you think that KDK meant to the people of Pittsburgh in processing the events of that day and then the healing that began over the weeks to follow?
Oh, I was quick to compare it to the now late John Corby's phenomenal coverage of the U.S. Air Flight disaster in 1994. He was on the air nearly a year before returning to Columbus, and I remember how many fans of his who became fans of the show I hosted with that blessing. I remember so many saying that what Mike Romai and I were doing, especially Mike, who is so seasoned at news talk and is such a pro, how it was therapeutic for the audience, and that it reminded them of what Corby had done 7 years earlier, and how powerful it was to have a medium to go to and speak through to reach other people and to share the sense of community in mourning, and then have it be, just part of our Commonwealth, which is part of 50 states, of course, but also have a show reaching over half the country and so much of Canada, and that know that so many thousands and thousands of people far away from Southwest Pennsylvania were tuning in and being able to join in that sense of community and that sense of loss. It was overpowering, and it was flattering to be mentioned in the same breath with John Corby's name. Yeah.
Thor Tolo joining us this evening. Thor, thank you so much, and looking forward to talking to you again.
I really appreciate it, Robert.
Absolutely. Thor Tolo joining us on the Disc Institute of Pittsburgh Newsline. This is week one of a look back over the course of the next several Wednesdays, all the way through the end of the year, in celebrating KDK Radio's 100 years on the air. Make sure you join us next Wednesday, 8:05, right here on KDK Radio.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.